Once more unto the breach, dear friends. Else close the wall up with our English dead. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to another, well, slightly more exciting than normal episode of The Personal Wealth Coach. And I'm going to be bringing Jeff on. Old Baldy is calling through the disinfected phone lines to connect to the program. Old Baldy, Jeff, are you on the line? And we're not hearing him. Oh, dear. This may be a technical issue. So I'm just going to go ahead and jump in to do our disclaimers. Because let's see if it works now. We're going to be pushing buttons and seeing if we can get people on the air here. Okay. Are you able to hear me now? All right. Why don't you just call in on the main line if you can hear me, because it's not working on the second line. All right. So that is an example of working from home. Those of you that are experiencing that this week and the week before actually know what I'm talking about. There's been a lot of that sort of thing going on this week. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. It's going to be one of our maybe more important radio programs in the last, I don't know, almost a decade. So who is the Personal Wealth Coach? Well, it's Jeff and Jake McClure. Jake is here in the studio. Jeff is trying to call in on line two, and we'll see if that actually works. I don't think he can hear me tell him to call in on line one. Can you hear me? I have all of the switches in place. So if you can hear me, please call in on the other line. Thanks. Okay, more technical issues. The Personal Wealth Coach is a registered investment advisory firm. We're registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. What does that mean? It means the firm that we're associated with gives fiduciary investment advice. That means in the best interest of the client. It's regulated by the SEC. They don't approve or deny anything. We work in the business of giving unbiased truth. That's kind of impossible to be completely unbiased, and we'll be the first to recognize that. But we actively look for our biases. That's the idea of fiduciary. Now, this radio program, it's also called the Personal Wealth Coach, but we're not giving fiduciary investment advice on the air. What we give on the air is education. And this weekend, it's more important than normal. The idea here, and I don't think he's listening to the radio. He keeps calling on line two. I can't pick him up on line two. The idea that we're trying to get across here is not to blindly go through life, but to plan ahead, to plan and have a rational reason for the things you do. And I am going to try playing some commercials here because Jeff keeps calling on the wrong line and it's not getting through. So I'm going to play some commercials. I'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. I'm going to give him a call and ask him to call in on the other line. I'll be back on the other side. When we're back, we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about, a lot of scary stuff to talk about, and why being prepared for it means it's less scary. So I'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back. Hopefully we're really back. I've got a caller on 773-1400 that I sure hope is Jeff. If that's you, go ahead, sir.
Okay, which way do you want me to go?
Ahead. There's only one direction there. It's just straight ahead.
Okay, I'm actually moving east at about 440 miles an hour.
That's the rotation of the Earth you're discussing, I think.
Well, I'm moving ahead.
Yes, that is ahead. It is true.
So since when we orient, we look east, that is obviously ahead.
Yes. Well, I was just doing the disclosures I've gotten to through the SEC and the fiduciary side, and that we're giving not giving investment advice on the air, but education, and this is an important program, maybe the most important program we've done in a decade. We also do not pay to do this program. We do advertise on the radio station, but we don't pay to do the program, and that's something that people ask us about that. This is not an infomercial. We really are trying to get education out there.
And the information we educate with has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable.
That's correct.
So we make no guarantee or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of said information.
Why is it that they say said information in the small type, as if reading it is the same as saying it?
Well, because we're saying it on the air.
Yeah, we are, but the attorney's right, and they say in said information. Is it the same to write something as to say something?
I think it's more serious when you write it.
I think so, too. It's harder to tell if you have a sense of humor.
If you record it when you say it, it's almost the same thing as writing, because it has a permanent record and can be used in court against you by thought, word, and deed.
Yes. I wanted to break in with something. I've been talking to a lot of people this week. I lost my voice every day of the week talking on the phone to people about what's going on.
I've been wanting to ask you, where did you last see it?
If I knew where I had put it, I wouldn't have lost it.
I haven't ever seen your voice, so that makes it hard to find.
I think it keeps finding me at night, because I get it back in the morning.
Good.
The people that I have been hearing panicking are usually the people that are calming down the rest of the world. The people that are panicking the most are Silicon Valley tech folks, or Austin's version of Silicon Valley tech folks as well. And I've spoken to quite a few of them. They're very, very smart people who are very good in their own field, but there's a whole area of the world that they're ignorant of, a whole area of knowledge that they're ignorant of, and they're not used to that. So they say with the same confidence some things that really don't make sense. I was called earlier this week, and the first thing they said was, "Jake, assume that the grocery stores don't fill back up." That was the beginning of the conversation. And I had this.
Was that a digital guy or was that an economist?
That was a digital guy.
Sounds like an economist.
Economists do a lot of assuming, but they actually understand the supply chain better than that. We are, in the United States, are the supplier of food to the world. There is so much food in the United States. We have over a decade of wheat. We have near a decade of corn. And that includes exports as well as our own consumption. So just take a step back there. We have so much pork right now. Pork not meaning the political sense, what the Congress brings back, but literally pig pork. Because we're still in a trade war. And our biggest customer wasn't buying as much. So we have a lot of it. We have a lot of beef. We have a lot of produce. We are about to be inundated with toilet paper because all of the toilet paper manufacturers are in overdrive right now. They think this is bonanza time. This is when they make all their money. The problem with all of that is that there's only so much toilet paper that people will have room for in their house.
Garage.
Yes. We're going to have crates of toilet paper in the grocery stores. The toilet paper will be on sale for maybe a year after this. Because,
well, I said that's the indicator of when the market bottom is.
Right, when people recognize that there's plenty of toilet paper. That's one of the indicators, that kind of a humorous indicator. So behavioral finance, this is one of those areas that I have taken a lot of sort of ridicule in my career, because I've studied epidemics and pandemics and how they affect the market. And I talked to economists about it, and they've laughed at me and said, "This is silly. Why is it that you're studying this? That's pure trivia. That's pure history. We're over that stuff." And my response, it's been difficult. These are smart people that have been sniping at me over this. But my response has always been, we're not immune to new viruses. We're not immune to some new disease. It's going to take us a while to conquer that one, too. We've done an amazing thing in medicine in that we have knocked out smallpox. We've knocked out polio. We don't have measles breaking out and killing the elderly every year. We have conquered some amazing things, but it still takes time to recognize the new enemy and figure out how to deal with it. So that's why I've studied it. And some part of me has done it from this very cold, dry, well, trivia. It's really cool to read this stuff. But we've talked about it in the past, studying of natural disasters going back beyond Pompeii. How did markets react throughout history? And there have been markets throughout history. This is something people think that the stock market is some kind of new thing. It is new in that it's the ownership of companies that's being traded, but markets have been traded for a long, long time. And I think you're getting another call. Is that you?
No, I'm not getting another call.
Huh. Well, maybe we have a call waiting at the studio. Wouldn't that be great?
Could be.
Okay, so that's quite humorous in my mind, how prepared the studio is for phone-in calls. It's something that, you know, anybody that's read news over the past two decades has at least read three articles during that time period from some epidemiologist or another saying the next pandemic is going to be really bad. Do you remember reading those stories?
As a matter of fact, I've been rereading them.
Yeah.
There's one from 2017 that I just read from the World Health Organization.
These things have been coming out.
We have another one.
Right. These things have been coming out annually at least, and in some cases much more, but we kind of ignore them because we think, well, we got that conquered. We don't have to worry about that anymore. We do.
Well, you know, the SARS epidemic and the bird flu and the H1N1.
Right.
And Ebola, we had so many false alarms.
Colin Wolf.
I think it's reasonable that people said, okay, well, here's this terrible thing. We should be terribly afraid of it. And nobody in America died from it.
Right. So we just...
So if you go with your gut, then obviously it's not a problem. It's like if you lived on the coast and you had five hurricanes and all five of them didn't hit you, that means you're completely safe and no hurricane will ever hit you, right?
Oh, right. No. Wait, no. That's very much like... You know, last week we talked about wearing the seatbelt and how many people individually have been saved by seatbelts. And it's a pretty small minority, but we still do it because we don't want to die from not having the seatbelt on. And the majority of us wear seatbelts not because of click it or ticket, but because we don't want to die in an accident. I think that's the youngsters that are convinced that they will never die wear their seatbelts because they might get a ticket. The rest of us wear our seatbelts because we don't want to die. And
youngsters, you mean the youngsters are driving cars now?
Them youngsters, them newfangled little kids. No, yeah, they are. 16-year-olds are pretty young to be on the road. And you really have to convince them in a lot of cases to wear their seatbelts. And you say, it's going to cost you a couple of $100. And they go, okay, I'm going to put my seatbelt on. If you say you're going to die, they're like, "That, I'm invulnerable. I'm going to live forever. So far, so good."
Which is why spring break, there are lots of shots from the beaches
of
spring break with lots of young people gathering together. So now we're having an unusual sickness rate among young adults for the coronavirus.
Yeah, it's hitting the teenage and 20s population harder because they're meeting together a lot more. So that's an important piece of information. What are we trying to say here? What was I trying to say with, you know, we're going to have them again? This isn't the last one we're going to have. And we get an opportunity here that is a huge blessing. And I just said that the coronavirus was a blessing. If you have an epidemiologist or anybody else for that matter, but specifically epidemiologists who understand this stuff, and you give them a list of possible virus outbreaks, and you give them a list of 1,000 of them, coronavirus is one of the safest on the list. I mean, this isn't like the measles, which has a 60-meter contagion range, not 6 feet. We're talking about 180 feet. The types of viruses that exist out there that could mutate and attack us, are there's a lot of them. And we needed, in the middle of all of this, to have a wake-up call. If we were going to get a wake-up call, it was enough to wake us up and say, hey, these things still happen. If we were going to get one, this is the one to get. Because it is killing people, and I'm not trying to discount the tragedy that's happening. But I'm also pointing out that this is maybe the best wake-up call we could have gotten for the next time around. Our culture, the American culture, I'm going to give kind of two comparisons in culture, and then I'm going to hand it back to you as a cultural anthropologist. Old Baldy's a cultural anthropologist. I don't know if
people enjoy listening to that. You just keep talking.
I'll start with Chinese culture. Chinese culture is really, really good at responding to emergencies. They're authoritarian. They answer with one voice, and they can shut down whole areas very, very quickly. They're not good at innovating. Innovation requires a lot of creativity, a lot of less authority over them. And so they're not innovative, but they're really good at responding to surprise emergencies. We, on the other hand, are amazing innovators. We are the creators of most of the gadgets that the world is looking at. Without us, Huawei would not exist. Huawei, the Chinese cell phone company, which basically, if you look at their phone, it looks like smartphones that were invented in the United States. If you look at the Samsung, which I have one, it's a Google, it's an Android. But it's made in South Korea. Well, it was invented, all of the concepts of it were invented in the United States. Innovation takes place here, which makes us really hard to lead. It's like herding cats. And what we're showing right now with this patchwork response at the city level and the village level and the county level and the state level of uncoordinated response to this is part of being innovative. It's certainly not what I would like in this scenario, but the next time something like this happens, we're going to have a playbook. We're going to write a response based on what we're going through right now to say, at least in the lifetimes of the people that are alive today, we don't want to go through that again. We got to have a better response. We got to figure out what the rules are in advance. We need to talk about this, and we need to be prepared for it. And to give you an example of how that works, in the United States, we're extremely, extremely good at reacting and preparing for the last disaster we had, which is why nobody's even hinting that there's weakness in the banks. We already fixed that. We had weakness in the banks last time around, and we worked so hard to get that fixed that the banks are not a problem. In fact, people are saying, get my money out of the market and put it in the bank. The banks were the last thing to fail. We fixed that. The banks are in great shape. Next thing around is, okay, how do we communicate on a national level about a virus so that people pay attention? Or about any kind of sickness, for that matter. And that's where the playbook is being written now. We've got a lot of very, very smart people that are sitting at home bored right now, that are building ideas in their garage on innovation, and a lot of those innovations are focused on pandemics. And that's the nature of the culture that we live in. This is one of our great strengths, to be able to be caught blindsided is not a strength, but to prevent ourselves from being caught by the same thing again is a great strength. The more authoritarian the system, the quicker they respond to emergencies, but the worse they are at preparing for the next one and staying innovative in the process. Go ahead.
Let me give the Chinese a little pat on the back. They did get hit by the SARS virus much harder than we did.
Yeah.
And they got hit by the swine flu and the bird flu, and they did decide that that wasn't going to happen again and took some extensive precautions, had two or three prefab hospitals set up so they could be flown or trucked into a location and built in a few days. And they had the testing kits for the coronavirus, because the SARS and the H1N1 were coronaviruses.
Right.
No, not the H1N1, just the SARS and another one that came along. I don't remember which one it was, but they were coronaviruses.
MERS.
So they had test kits, MERS.
The Middle Eastern respiratory.
But SARS hit them hard enough that they decided to get ready for it. And I think it's just a natural tendency of humans. If it's never hit, you know, that we have a saying even that says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
And because it's broke someplace else, we can always say, well, that was just the Chinese, or that's just the Italians, or that's just the Spanish. We're different. We're Americans, so we're not going to get hit by this.
Right. And then we have a tendency to want to blame someone else as soon as it hits us. This is a little silly if you consider viruses more like an earthquake. That's a better way to look at it. Only earthquakes are now being formed from fracking, maybe hurricanes. It's nobody's fault. We only have our own ability to respond, our own responsibility. How do we respond to it? And the underlying factor that I have been saying again and again throughout the week is, number one, to everybody that I talk to, be the voice of reason. Look around and say when something is real and when somebody is afraid that the sky is falling. This is a bad situation, but we're still America. We're still capable of so much. The idea here of being the voice of reason, we've talked about the V-shaped downturns in the past, and I'm going to explain that. You can see it in the market. Anybody that looks at a graph of the market over the last 2 months, you see this massive cliff dropping down, that crash, that drop. Part of the reason why we've consistently, for years and years, people calling us up and saying, you're so pessimistic, and we're saying, remember in the downturn, we were the optimists. Well, we get to be optimists now. This is what we do. We're going to be pessimists when the economy's great. We're going to be optimists when the economy's not great. We get to flip now. We get to tell you all the good things that are happening. And I actually much prefer this. The only sad part is the economy has to be down for us to be here. The idea that, number one, we're getting through this, there's enough food to go around. Number two, it's bad. There are people who are living paycheck to paycheck that are not going to get a paycheck. And the government is trying to put together a response, but they're doing it in typical political fashion with a lot of attacks on each other. The Democrats are sniping at the president. The Republicans are putting together laws with no input from the Democrats. We got to get, at some point, Congress has to act like a family. Even a family with a feud going on inside it needs to get together and be a family. When emergencies happen, the president needs to get involved, the Congress needs to get involved, and they need to work together. They need to put their differences aside for a bit. They're not doing that, but I hope they will. We can't wait for that. We have to take responsibility for our own lives, and those of you that are on the conservative side will agree with that, and those of you that are on the liberal side will agree with that. We need to take responsibility for ourselves. We need to help people that are in trouble right now. People that are living paycheck to paycheck, the earliest that I'm seeing from the government, the checks, the that haven't been firmed up yet, it's not confirmed, but they're talking about mid-April getting a check. What about people that are having trouble now? Well, what can you do? In behavioral finance, in all my studies of pandemics, epidemics, all my studies of big disasters in the past, the way you get through it is not by fighting over rare items, not by fighting over the toilet paper, but by saying, I have extra toilet paper, who needs it? And do this at a distance, obviously be rational in this approach, but there's enough toilet paper out there, guys. There really is. We're not using the bathroom more than we were. There's enough to go around. The only reason why we're locked in this, there's not enough, is because we're in pure panic mode. We need to get back to a community. And this is something we said about a month ago when we were warning about coronavirus. People called in and said, should we buy gold? And we said, no, the price of gold generally plummets when you have some kind of a natural disaster, including pandemics.
It did.
It did. It's amazing. It's not like this is the first time we've gone through this. So what we did say is get to know your neighbors. Ask them for their phone numbers. Did you know that the majority of the United States does not know the phone number of their neighbor? How do you get through this as a community if you don't have a community? And we've got all our community online, and that's great. But it's really hard for Aunt Jane in Florida to give you some extra toilet paper if you're in Texas. Just
she could ship it to you.
Yeah. Do you have an Aunt Jane in Florida?
No.
See, you wouldn't even have that. That's what I'm saying. Little humor there. The idea that we're talking about, this concept of community, the only way we'll get through this quickly is, number one, keeping isolated from each other. Number two, banding together emotionally to support each other. We got to lean on each other with some distance in between us. That's the only way we get through any disaster.
Wait a minute. That's how you fall down.
Yeah, it's trust falls where nobody's there to catch you.
Right.
I'm not recommending doing trust falls together with the pandemic, stay 6 feet away, because that's how bruises happen.
Unless you're really tall.
But then you're not 6 feet away when they get caught, so you have to move back from the really tall people. So do trust falls on the trampoline. How's that?
There you go.
So this idea of community, I know that's a weird one because we've been moving toward our community being online. We need to be able to know our neighbors and trust them. We need to be able to help our neighbors, and the biggest thing that I can say right now is look up your local food pantry, and if you feel like you've got some extra stuff, give it to them. Because there are people now that haven't been paid for a week in Texas. There's people in Boston that haven't been paid for a month. And the unemployment websites across the nation are crashing. We're going to have, next Thursday, we're going to have an unemployment report that's going to make everybody cry. And we're likely to see the market drop again there. Are we recommending getting out of the market to our clients? No. Because you never know when the bottom is. We might be past the bottom already. I don't think we are, but we might be. Should we tell everybody to get out at the bottom? No. You keep the good investments that you have. And this is, if we've learned anything from history about these events, the communities that band together and that own property are the communities that come out of natural disasters the best. Owners do well, and I'm not telling anyone who's listening here something new by that. Everybody knows that people that own stuff tend to do better than people that don't own stuff. That's about as layperson speak as you can get. So why is it in natural disasters people go to sell the stuff they own? Well, because they're afraid. If you're afraid enough of the stuff that you own that you wish to sell it, you should not have bought it in the first place. And I realize this is like hindsight 2020, but it's something that we have been preaching for as long as I have been an adult. Own only well-diversified, high-quality investments. And then when they go down, don't sell them. It's really hard to remember that when they go down. But they go down. High quality goes down as well as low quality in panics. Everything goes down. In academia, we call it all correlations go to one. That means everything's down or everything's up. In a panic, everything's down. When you get irrational exuberance, everything's up. So I wish there was a one-word statement for irrational exuberance, like panic. But that concept, when everything is going up, don't buy. When everything is going down, don't sell. those are some truisms that if you hold on to those things, it's great. And if you have the potential to sell when everything is going up and buy when everything is going down, those are the people we call wealthy. throughout history, that's been the case. And the people that are terrified enough to want to sell their retirement assets that they have worked decades for, at the worst possible time, I need all of our listeners to be the voices that convinced them not to. To say, don't do it. Take a breath. Wait, yes, there are going to be companies that fail and go to zero. A lot of shale companies, a lot of the smaller shale companies are in the process of failing. There are a lot of restaurants that may go under. These are small businesses. The larger businesses generally have a lot of reserves, and they're going to get targeted first by the banks for low interest loans. Why am I talking about a food pantry when all of this is going on? It's because we may have hungry people right now. And it's a bad idea to think about how much toilet paper you have, how many months' supply of toilet paper you have when the cities are asking people to stop flushing newspapers. Let's not be cruel to each other. There is enough toilet paper. Our supply of toilet paper is getting larger. It just takes a while to get there. That phone call earlier this week where a very brilliant man said to me that first sentence of assume the grocery stores don't fill back up. And I said, I have to stop you there. I have to stop. And he was pretty energetic with that beginning sentence. I have to stop you there. How would you stop them from filling back up? And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, the trucks are still driving. If you go out and look at the highway, which I'm not necessarily recommending, but I drove on the highway to get to the studio today, there are trucks on the highway and a few cars. Most of the trucks that I saw were grocery trucks and Amazon trucks, which have groceries in them. We have lots and lots of groceries heading to the grocery stores right now. The canning factories are on overtime. They have separation between them, but they've been declared to be essential. Truck drivers are coming in, and my question to this brilliant man who was panicking about this was, are you going to stop the trucks? Are you going to go out and pop their tires? Because otherwise, the food's going to show up. And when it shows up in its abundance, because we're still America, and it's really, really easy to go out on the farm and stay 6 feet away from each other while you're harvesting. We have lots of food. We have lots of toilet paper. It's just not in the stores right now. And this is how the panic ends. Number one, panics end because people get exhausted. It is impossible for a human to live in a state of panic for very long without getting sick. Just think about that for a second. It's exhausting. At some point, even when bombs are falling on people, they move out of panic into, this is my reality at the moment. What can I do? And my answer to that is, if you can afford it, give to the food pantry. If you can't afford it, call the food pantry and ask for help. We can't wait for the government on this one. We have to be the America of my youth and the America of everybody that's listening's youth, the America that is willing to sacrifice for each other instead of knocking people out so that you can take a roll of toilet paper from them. That's not who we are. I know that deep in the core of me, and I think everybody that's listening knows that about who we are. We bond together in times of crisis, and I haven't seen that start yet completely. It's beginning to start. General Motors is saying we'll make ventilators. Tesla is saying we'll make ventilators. Just tell us how to do it. What do we need to do? What's more, a group of thousands of engineers remotely on open source platforms like Thingiverse are creating 3D CAD models of even better ventilators than were available before that can be made at home. You have to have a 3D printer. But that means that people can be preparing ventilators at a much larger scale. Companies will be able to take designs like this and make them FDA approved. And we're going to have better ventilators out of this. We're going to have a lot of breakthroughs in what we're doing. That sort of thing where people are bonding together and saying, what can we do to help? We need more of that. And when you, listeners, hear someone being way off the board panicked about end of times type scenario, This is how I approach every great big socioeconomic collapse in history, every perceived possible collapse now. Do things that are healthy for you that also would help in the event of a collapse. As soon as you start to do things that damage you today so that you can be prepared for later, you get into a dangerous area. If you're going into debt right now so that you can be prepared for a pandemic that lasts 8 years, you're hurting yourself a lot because you cannot prepare for a pandemic that lasts 8 years on your own. Just like you can't prepare for the disaster when the poo hits the fan that everybody wants to prepare for, you can't prepare for that on your own. I don't care how many guns you have, how much ammunition you have. If you only have two hands, you're limited. You need a community. And that's hard in the prepping community because it's not really a community. It's like libertarians. When you get them all together to say, all right, what do we all agree on? Part of being libertarian is the only thing you can agree on is that you don't agree with anybody else about anything. We even the libertarians, maybe the libertarians need to come out and say, hey, I've been prepping for this for a decade. Who needs help? This isn't the one I was thinking it was going to be. This looks like it's going to have an end in the future. Who needs help?
Jake, I think we probably ought to break for commercials.
We already did while I was waiting for you to call in.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So that's, I want to hand it back to you. You've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I wanted to hit those subjects as a priority today, that the way we get through this is we get together, we stop each other from panicking, we give each other what is not common today, common sense. Common sense becomes very uncommon in panics. Be that common sense to the people that you know. Recognize that at 9/11, we were in a panic. We thought, all right, what's next? What's the next thing that's going to get hit? People were afraid to fly for years after that. Well, we can look back and say we responded pretty well. What were we really afraid of? We were afraid because we gotten hit. There are things we can do. Do those things. And I'm handing it over to you.
First off, because of the fact that the telephone lines are limited coming into KTEM, if you want to email either Jeff or Jeff at TPWC or Jake at TPWC.com. Jeff at TPWC.com, he's sitting here watching the email very carefully. And post your question, we'll address it on the air. Let's talk about the markets for a second. I mean, people are kind of interested in that.
Yeah.
I think the Standard Poor's 500 stock index fell 15% for the week, ending March 20th. Now, what it closed at 23.09.04.92, which sounds terrible. It also sounds terrible. It's down 31.93% from its high a month ago. And I've read again and again and again, this is the worst month since 1987. Well, let's talk about 1987 for a second.
You remember it. You were in business in 1987.
I remember 1987 vividly. I remember the fear. It was palatable.
Palatable or palpable?
Both.
It was tasty and feelable.
It was palpable, absolutely.
Yeah.
The fear was so thick you could cut it with a knife. Everything stopped just because the market went down. Went down over 22. Went down 22.4% in a single day on a Monday. It's now down 31.93. But in 1987, with that fear, the market ultimately dropped 51%. It did it also in 1973 and 2002. 2000 through 2002 and 2008 and 2009. And the important thing to remember is we survived all of those and came back to prosper. And the people who didn't get out consistently are really, really happy they didn't get out. Because they look at their gains since then and they're just grateful they didn't get out and they're happy they didn't get out. And that's the important thing is this is not the end of the world. The impressive thing about the markets this week and this month, it's what happened to bonds. You know, we kind of have lulled into the thinking that bonds go up when stocks go down. Well, in fact, bonds went down too. Bonds dropped about 11 or 12% this week, depending on which kind of bond it is. Municipal bonds dropped quite a lot. the Federal Reserve had to step in and start buying municipal bonds, by the way, as they did treasuries. And as they, and they're not buying corporate bonds yet, but that could happen. It's really hard to realistically buy corporate bonds and affect the market because they're all so different. Also, there's so many of them. There's no index of bonds that you can buy. This was kind of unusual, just like gold fell. The treasury note actually increased in interest rates this week, which is good, which means the market for treasuries actually went up because the Federal Reserve started buying them. The 10-year treasury note, the 10-year note that traditionally has been around, historically in my experience, has run around anywhere from 3 to 5%, is now yielding 0.857%, and it was down to 0.5% midweek. This is a real panic. I mean, there's no place to hide. There's no place you can go and say, okay, here I'm safe. Even money market funds, which we basically assume are safe, had to have a federal, thank God this happened, by the way, and it does indicate we've done some right things. The Federal Reserve is providing a backstop for money market funds. That means that if a money market fund is about to drop below $1 per share, they can go to the Federal Reserve and get money so they don't have to drop below $1 a share. And there have actually been some prime money market funds. Those are the ones that can fluctuate, legally can fluctuate up and down. And there have been some prime money market funds that have had their parent companies have to step in and put money into the money market fund. There's literally no place to hide unless you had your money in an FDIC-insured bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And even there, thank God we got the FDIC and we've got those things. By the way, we got a question, a very good question. How about credit unions? Are they insured? Yes, credit unions are insured by a federally chartered agency just like the FDIC. And Congress is no legal obligation to back the FDIC or to back the credit union insurance group. But they've proven in the past that if they start to run short on money, Congress will step in and give them money. So you're in pretty good shape if you're in a good position. Even if you're in a prime money market fund and it drops below a dollar, don't panic and try to sell it. Because what will happen is they have the right to restrict sales, and you may get stuck below a dollar when it comes back to a dollar. I am convinced that Congress, the Treasury, and the Federal Reserve will step in to support money market funds because we can't afford to have a run on money market funds. The most important thing to understand about the markets right now is doing nothing is courageous, and you should do nothing with a great deal of enthusiasm.
Yeah. And that's usually not what people are saying to do in a panic, but it is really a good idea. Even if you're in really risky investments, selling them now when it has nothing to do with the quality of the investments is probably a bad idea. Even if you're in places that you don't trust, you shouldn't sell them when they go down. You shouldn't buy them if you plan on selling them when they drop.
Okay, we got an email from a person who questioned, in the 80s, Japan was buying everything that was going to rule the world. Not exactly. Once we get over this pandemic, I believe that many countries will rethink their Chinese supply chain. The used guys think, and it literally says used guys, think a Japan contraction is in the cards for the Chi-Com. Yeah, they're already having one.
Yeah.
The Chinese are, for the first time since they have been part of the world trade, for the first time since Richard Nixon, are actually in a recession. And I really seriously think...
It's not official yet.
Majors,
yeah, but it is. It looks to be a recession from my view, too.
All the indicators are they're in a recession. Just like all the indicators are, we're already in a recession. We won't know it for 2 quarters, but it's pretty clear that we're in a recession at this point. The important thing in answer to the question is, I think everybody who's been dependent upon China for their supply chain is going to rethink that. And I think Jake will agree with me completely. What they're going to do is, to initially you'll see some movement to other third world countries, other emerging markets countries, and you'll see some reliance on Mexico more than China, and a lot of things will go on. The important thing, though, that will come out of this is saying we can't depend on somebody outside the United States, somebody who's far away, to supply a critical part. And it'll be a slow movement, but it'll accelerate, and it'll be big, and we'll go to automation. In other words, we will find an automated way to create the parts that are being created in China because of cheap labor.
Yeah.
China labor is no longer as cheap as it was either, by the way.
No, and this is a second type of wake-up call, number one, about disease in general, but number two, about our supply chain. And I've heard this again and again from everybody I've talked to this week, we need to get self-reliant on the things that we need. We did it with oil, and now we need to do it with other parts of what we do. We're self-reliant on food. We're self-reliant on oil. We can get self-reliant on electronics and rare earths, but it's going to take a concerted effort to do it, and it's going to need a lot. And don't expect jobs to be flowing back from China. We're going to automate.
And well, you don't want jobs to flow back from China because we don't have anybody to do the jobs.
Right.
I mean, we will now, but that'll be very temporary. The labor market contraction that we haven't officially seen the data on, but we've seen enough anecdotal information that we know we're going to have a massive unemployment issue. Unemployment, the Secretary of the Treasury is reported to have said that unemployment could go as high as 20%.
Right.
I think that is not unreasonable.
I think that's pretty expected at this point.
And it may not go all the way to 20%. Now, if we did the same thing, the United Kingdom, just, I don't know if you saw, the United Kingdom said basically, if you don't lay people off, if you're an employer and you don't lay people off, we will pay the employer 80% of the wages that they pay to people instead of laying them off. And that means that in the United Kingdom, they shouldn't have massive layoffs. We're already seeing the layoffs go on, and it's going to go on here because I think the whatever the package is, it's not going to include offering to pay businesses to keep people employed.
No.
80% of their wages.
Yeah. And do you mind if I step in for just a second? And I want to hit a couple of things. We need to overreact to this. People keep saying we're overreacting. We are. Because if we don't overreact and get isolated from each other, then this particular sickness will be around in circulation constantly for a longer period of time. We talk about a V-shaped downturn. When it drops like it does in a pandemic, you've got this precipitous cliff that just drops in a pandemic on the market. And then on the other end of it, you see the opposite cliff that's generally not quite as steep, tends to be a little bit more graded, but the shorter the drop, the shorter the time period it's been down, the quicker the recovery for the upside. And why am I saying that? That seems obvious. Well, we can do something about how long we're at the bottom of that V. Why is it that in pandemics, it's a V-shape on the other side, too? Well, because in any other natural disaster, when you go back to the factory, the first thing you do is catalog damage, and you do insurance claims, and you do all of those things. In this natural disaster, what we're seeing in China right now as people are going back to work is you just turn the switch back on, and the factories start back up, and people go back out to eat, and that's why we see a V-shape in these. The way you keep the bottom of the V as short as possible is by overreacting to this so it doesn't stay around forever.
If I can interject something here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The analysts that I've seen in the past few days are saying W-shape now instead of V-shape.
Yeah.
And it's because we'll probably have a rise and then another fall. There probably will be a second wave of this.
Absolutely.
What happened is the first one will die off. We won't have a vaccine yet. We'll get lower and lower contagion. People will start back to work. People will start going back out again. And then we'll get hit a second time. That happened in 1918. It's probably going to happen now. The third wave is what we're going to miss because we'll probably have a vaccine, which we didn't have in 1918.
Right. And we had some nasty flu bugs that lasted for about a decade after that with a much higher mortality rate for a while. We're going to skip out on that. And we are about out of time for this hour. We've got another hour coming up. And we've got a lot more things to talk about, including a lot of good companies are being sold at really low prices for the only reason being panic, and we can give some rationale behind why we think they're good and why they shouldn't be sold. There's a lot of good news out there in the middle of this. We can't forget that there's a big looming cloud. It's huge. But there's a silver lining, and the silver lining goes all the way around the cloud. So we'll talk about this some more in next hour. If you would like to call us off the air, we do give customized, personalized investment advice to people of high net worth. One of the top things we've been talking about for years is growing the reserves, having enough reserves on hand for the downturn, not knowing what would cause the downturn, but that downturns happen. Well, we've been proven out. That's not like it's a big deal, but we're out of time. If you'd like to call us locally, the number is
254-947-1111.
Or you can reach that number toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There's a contact us form there. There's also a bunch of newsletters going back that talk about having your reserves on hand for the next downturn, when it comes, not if it comes. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach. Thanks for listening.